Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Midori, listening to Why Are People Into That with Tina Horn.
Welcome to the 49th episode of Why Are People Into That, the podcast that cuts you down to size. My guest this month is Antonia Crane, author of the sex work memoir Spent, and co-author of a new screenplay about the unionization of the lusty lady peep show. I sat on Antonia's black leather couch when I was in Los Angeles earlier this year, and together we took a deep dive into the subject of erotic shame. This episode is all in one, and next month I'll release the rest of our conversation about sex work writers as an interrobang, so stay tuned. July is BOGO month for vibrators at the Pleasure Chest. Yes, for the entire month of July, anything that vibrates at the Pleasure Chest is buy one, get one, half off. That goes for the New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles stores, or from anywhere in the world on PleasureChest.com. This deal is perfect for friends who want to shop together, couples looking to try something new, or for the single slut who needs to collect them all. Don't miss out on this stimulating summer deal on rabbits, strap-on harness-compatible attachments, and travel-perfect pocket rockets. That's buy one, get one half off for every vibrator at Pleasure Chest stores and online at pleasurechest.com. Follow at Tina Horn's Ass on Twitter and Instagram so you'll never miss any of my podcast, article, or live appearance updates. And now, bury your head in your hands, for why are people into shame? I would love to talk about shame.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about shame.
How can you forget? It's always there.
It's always there. I'm in denial.
So we were, I think we were talking in like some Instagram comment about shame and... You know, I've done an episode about humiliation with Princess Callie, Why Are People Into Humiliation? And that, you know, she does so much amazing work about humiliation. And, you know, that's specifically about the fetish of humiliation and how it could manifest, whether it's forced feminization or like very literal objectification, like becoming furniture. Or, you know, like animal play where you're somebody's dog or somebody's pony, or financial domination, which you mentioned, like can obviously be a form of humiliation play. But, you know, that's like very much like BDSM, consensual power exchange, negotiation. But I think that the thing that you and I were starting to chat about and that we... that I want to dig into today is not about necessarily people recognizing the shame inside of them and reappropriating it in a cathartic, even empowering, erotic way, but the attachment that people have to their shame and how they it like gets its like it like gets its claws into your desire and then you don't know what to do without it. And the ways that manifests, I don't know. Is that like anything near like what you were, what you had in mind?
I don't know. I mean, show me a person that doesn't have shame. I don't know. I wonder if this isn't like a knee-jerk reaction to the self-esteem movement in which we were sort of informed that like we were supposed to have this thing called self-confidence and self-esteem.
Right.
But we found that we were dangerously low levels and we weren't sure why.
Right. And then we felt more shame that we didn't have the thing that we were supposed to just be able to like call upon that.
Oh, let's call upon our that resource. Where's that resource?
Yeah, this like sustainable
You told me I'm supposed to have it, and I don't, and I don't know where to get it.
So now I feel worse.
And now I feel worse about myself. Exactly. And then there's another thing of just that I wonder about. I think the hot thing in sexuality for people, and, you know, it has to do with power and our willingness to surrender it and get it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a constant tug of war with that. And there is something erotically charged about power.
Absolutely. I mean, that's
I mean, literally show me a person that doesn't want respect, but then who also doesn't want it taken away when they're in bed and be told that they're a garbage piece of whore, piece of trash, piece of shit.
So let me ask
sometimes,
you, do you feel
once in a while?
Well, do you feel that when people desire to be called degrading names, whether it's a misogynistic name like slut or whore or or just like general humiliation, like you're a dog, you're a piece of trash, like you're nothing, you're just a hole for me to use, like et cetera, et cetera. Like, do you feel that that is a desire to not be respected, or do you feel like sex can be a space? I mean, I just come back again and again, and you mentioned David Foster Wallace's Against Irony. Like, I come back and over and over again to the idea that, like, sex is actually a very ironic space because, like, I feel that the more somebody calls me, that the more that I'm, like, consensually welcoming somebody using degrading words or like objectifying me and like just like making me a whole to use, like the more respect I feel from them, right? So so like I don't actually, that's like playing with shame, but I don't actually feel ashamed.
Right. I agree with you that sex is a consensual, fun sense of play place where we can play with this stuff. And I also, but I do think that things don't happen by themselves. I hate using vacuum. I don't know why that's always annoyed me, but I'll never use it. But I think that we respond to what's happening culturally, and what's happening culturally is there is this policing of words.
Yes.
And there's a self-policing, which I find horrifying.
Yeah. And everybody always wants to get out from under that.
And I think we want to get out from underneath that. And I think that we want a sense of play in sex. And I think sex is a fun, smart way to play with it.
And also when people tell you what to do, you want to do the opposite. Or what people definitely, when people tell you what not to do, that definitely makes you want
to
do it.
And I tend to believe, just as a sex worker for 25 years, that everybody's a little bit of everything. And you're a liar if you don't believe that. Like, I feel like every super sub has had some experience getting off on being in a powerful space in another part of their lives. Every findom cash pig that I've come across or studied or talked to, they are in a powerful position in their lives financially,
right,
in a managerial role on some level.
So the thing that they want and crave more than anything else is to be cut released down to size. Yes.
Release. Isn't it release that we're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're not doing drugs, which, I mean, Kat Marnell said it so beautifully in one of her columns, it's about like people do drugs because it feels good.
Yeah.
And they want to release.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that sex is similar, AKA the same, that people are looking for like a release from the pressures and tensions.
Yeah.
And then there's this heavily policed thing where we're supposed to be so fucking careful all the time that I think sex is a really fun and smart consensual place to like bat that around.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like the back to the AIDS culture and coming from that, is that what happened specifically was that the powerful writers of that day that came from the AIDS crisis and the massive loss of our friends were writers like Avital Ronell and David Wonderowitz and Kathy Acker that were savage and bloody. And like, I remember going to parties where we'd walk into a warehouse and there was a bald man hanging from meat hooks. like we were playing with this idea of body and blood play and writing about it in these really powerful, savage ways that directly responded to what was happening culturally. So nothing's by accident. And you talk about shame. I also think that this is so weird to say. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
The liberal lefty community is anti-whore and misogynistic all fucking day long. And I'm tired of it.
The devil, you say.
I'm so fucking tired of it. I'm so tired of these, of sex worker voices being crowded out and dismissed and out of the brilliant conversations happening.
And also thrown under the bus in the sense of the marriage rights movement being the like fastest and most visible and vocal and effective political movement in the queer community in decades, and that the people now that we have quote unquote marriage equality, whatever that means, mm-hmm. like now is the time, like immediately, that we need to talk about at which queers were thrown under the bus in order to make that happen. And the answer is
sex workers,
trans people, sexual deviants,
mm-hmm.
even people who are just
people of color.
Yeah, absolutely. People of color foremost. And all of the intersections of those other identities that we mentioned, you know, sex workers of color, trans people of color, mm-hmm. And also people who are just out and vocal and confident and proud about their sexuality, about being kinky, about being
mm-hmm.
non-monogamous, about anal sex, you know? I mean, that's like part of the erasure of the marriage equality movement is like, no, we're just like you. We're just like you. Like, and we promise we're not going to talk about anal sex. We're just going to have it behind this closed door. Like right. We're married. We are adopting a kid. It's fine. Right.
Right.
So now is the time that that all of the people who are now benefiting from that privilege need to step up for all of us so mm-hmm. that we're not completely left behind by that movement.
Absolutely. Cheryl Strayed said it in an essay called Pussy Fever, that, you know, everyone's fine when they get to feast at the table feminism set. But yet they turn their backs on other women and sex workers and people of color and trans people.
Mm.
And we need to. I think, you know, I think that Transparent, you know, as a television show is really wonderful in so many ways, and that it gives voice and visibility to trans people, older trans people specifically, which is wonderful, and Jewish.
Mm.
It's incredible. You know, her show became a movement. And there's so much like forgiveness and love around that. But not sex workers.
Yeah.
So when? How about now?
Now would be a good
time.
That's
why we need to make our movie. And that's why I want to make a TV show, you know, about sex workers. That's why I want people to read the writers that you and I just talked about.
Yeah.
And I wrote a Lenny letter that's coming out also.
Oh, great.
I love Lena Dunham and everything that she's doing with girls.
Oh, cool. It's
super important. I had thought she was anti-sex worker, and I'm not sure why I thought that.
Oh, well, she's one of the people, there's a reason that you thought that, which is that she has been very vocal about being anti-sex worker in the feminist sense of seeing all sex work as a perpetuation of the exploitation of women, and that in a feminist utopia, we wouldn't need sex work because sex work is a function of the patriarchy. That's like definitely I don't know if to this exact moment in time if that is her position, but she has made many statements to that effect, and she was one of the most vocal rich white Hollywood actresses that signed the petition against Amnesty International's call for global decriminalization.
Wow. I didn't know that. Well, those girls just published my Lenny letter about how I came out to my mother as a sex worker.
That's awesome. And also I will add that I
pitched a piece, an audio piece about sex workers' self-care, like how do sex workers practice self-care in a world that specifically in a world that stigmatizes us.
Yeah.
And that we get stigma coming at us from all sides.
Yes.
Including inside.
Oh,
And her, so the producer of Lena Dunham's show, Women of the Hour, is this queer woman named Jenna Weiss Berman.
Okay.
And she put out a call for that show. And I was like, I want to do this piece on sex workers and self-care. And they were actually going to do an entire episode about sex work. And then they decided not to, and I'm not entirely sure why. Jenna Weiss Berman told me that it was because they decided they weren't the people to speak with authority on sex work. I wasn't involved in that decision at all, but they paid me a nice kill fee for that piece.
Good.
Is
that enough though to get a kill fee?
I mean, it was enough to get a kill fee, because getting paid is important.
Yeah, it is.
And they could definitely have just been like, sorry, we killed the piece. And that is like, and like not given me, and you know, there was no contract that said that they had to do that. But then,
oh, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah. And then they also were like, please pitch this anywhere, you know? So I still get to put it out into the world.
Is it somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Where is it?
So it was on the Whorecast.
Oh, great.
And I posted it on my Patreon. Awesome. But I can also, I'll send it to you.
Send it to me. Great. I would love to read it, hear it,
awesome.
See it,
yeah.
All of it.
Good. But my point is that it seems like Lena Dunham is maybe trying to, I mean, she certainly grows up in public, in full view of everyone.
She does.
And I respect that. And it does seem like she is willing to admit that she made a mistake and like willing to be like, just because I'm on the record saying this 3 years ago doesn't mean that's
how I feel today.
Is what, how I feel today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton did the same thing. She was very anti-gay marriage
for a
very long time and danced around it forever and then changed.
Totally. Absolutely.
We're allowed to change our minds. And let's hope that Lena Dunham changes her mind.
Same. And Hillary Clinton.
And shame.
Let's go back to shame. What is your definition of shame?
Feeling shitty about oneself for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Unwarranted low self-esteem and low self-worth.
Yeah.
That doesn't come from something real.
Yeah.
Maybe. What is your definition of shame?
Good question. I couldn't.
Well, okay, let's talk, because that's like kind of a vague thing. Let's say, when have you felt ashamed of yourself? Because I could say I have felt ashamed of myself when I've lied in the past. When I crossed my own lines and didn't want to or need to, I just did. And then I lied about it, because a lie is a lie is a lie.
That's true.
Right? Am I right?
You're
okay.
Right. You're right. I think that shame is behind all of my bad feelings, actually, now that I think about it.
Or the shame root. Of what
though?
Let's get in this.
Yeah, let's,
it's not
do it.
Easy. No one said this was going to be easy.
I think that, okay, so I just came from International Miss Leather. And
right, San Francisco, right?
In San Francisco. Well, in San Jose, actually.
Okay.
It was in San Francisco for a long time. And I am like struggling with feeling ashamed of not putting myself out there or getting outside of my comfort zone in these structured sexually exhibitionist spaces, because I think that I'm letting myself sort of make excuses or for the fact that I just am like afraid to put myself out there. I guess I'm like afraid of rejection or afraid of making myself vulnerable and then not having control, which goes back to what you were saying before about
everything
power.
Is surrendering.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm like afraid to surrender.
Lose control.
And then I'm ashamed that I guess I'm like ashamed of not practicing what I preach to other people.
So being a fraud. These are fears.
Oh, being
so
an interloper.
So you think that all fears
yeah.
are shame-based? Maybe they are. I don't know.
Well, let's think about some fears. Like, I think that, you know, the fear of public speaking, which is not a fear that I suffer from, is a fear of being ashamed that you did a bad job.
Okay, so I'm afraid of public speaking, but I'm also afraid of not speaking.
Yeah.
I hate myself when I procrastinate.
Right.
Like, I hate, why am I doing that? Like, why can't I just fucking do it? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that is, like, what am I ashamed of? Am I ashamed of succeeding or am I ashamed of failing? And what really is the difference anyway?
Yeah.
Ashamed of doing, afraid of acting, afraid of not acting.
Yeah.
Maybe shame is just kind of like this undercurrent of almost every impulse.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
So maybe we have to use it sexually to like bring it out into the light in a fun way.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, I mean, I'm a very vocal proponent of the way that bringing power and shame and control and anxieties into sex is an extremely effective tool for undermining that power.
Yeah.
For undermining the control that the shame has over you. You know, like the more, like the time that I've spent practicing BDSM and specifically the time that I've spent doing BDSM sex work, because there's always that extra like power exchange involving the money and the mm-hmm. negotiation around the money and also maybe the opportunity to take my own identity or desire out of it, because ultimately I'm working, right? So mm-hmm. and then I'm able to like be more analytical, which is also a like comfort zone place for me, instead mm-hmm. of like letting my body go, for
right.
example.
Releasing. Relinquishing control over your body.
Yeah. But that time has been valuable to me in the sense that I see people trying to power trip me coming a mile away. And I I'm very proud of my ability to like remain very imperious when people are like trying to power trip me.
How do you do that? Because this is going to be helpful to me in the classroom, because I deal with challenging students sometimes. And when they're trying to undermine you.
I guess I just see it as, when people are trying to undermine me or trying to power trip me, okay, number one, it's a totally like cheesy like Alice in Wonderland thing, like it's just Jabberwocky, and if you say you have no power over me, then it has no power over you.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I've just through practice and repetition, I feel like I have an intuitive understanding of how that power trip, which I would define as like reaching out and like unconsensually like trying to have power over someone, or acting as if you have power over someone that they didn't give you,
mm-hmm.
is an impulse that comes from a place of insecurity.
Right.
So when somebody behaves that way, they think that they're making themselves like puffing themselves up and being like big and vicious and powerful. And I'm just like, oh no,
it's the opposite.
I see
right?
you. This is your insecurity talking, and that actually makes you seem really puny to me. Not that having insecurities makes someone puny, but like acting on insecurities and thinking that you can use that as power.
Yeah.
Just makes them seem really small, and then I feel like I can just like press my fingers together and squish them.
You're making me think of something, and I don't know if this is where we want to go with this, but I'm going to go there anyway.
Dangerous tangent.
Then maybe like all of this, you know, abolish shame and reject shame. Like maybe we need shame. in order to fuel us.
I'm glad that you said that, because I have definitely reached the point in my sex positive culture career that I feel, and you know, maybe everybody needs to sort of go through this period when they're like coming to or getting turned out in sex positivity, if you will, mm-hmm. where they have to be like, yeah, let's dissipate shame. Mm-hmm. Like that's the work I'm doing. I'm basically just being like, shame is bad and we should just be hedonists and enjoy. So, but and I was totally that person mm-hmm. when I was 25, 26. And that was like, that was what I thought that the mission of my work was. And now I feel like, oh, but when I was doing that, I was just replicating all of the power structures that benefited me, and like benefiting.
That's from interesting. You should say that.
Benefiting from my privilege, right? But like right. in the interest of this is liberation. Hell no, that's not yeah. liberation. That's like you know, like it's how Tina got her groove back. You know, but it's not. Yeah, it's convenient. It's convenient, and it's not creating it's not actually creating a world where.
I'm wondering where all this sex positivity. Liberated. Yeah, you bring me to another hard point, which is I wonder, like, as a hardcore feminist and sex worker.
Yeah, likewise.
Like, where does all this sex positivity really leave women? Sometimes it leaves us alone and feeling really discarded.
Yeah.
Like, easily discarded, cheated on, and we're not supposed to feel uncomfortable about it.
Yes.
And we're not supposed to feel ashamed and uncomfortable and embarrassed that we were cheated on. Because we're just supposed to be okay with it because, oh gosh, they must have just been ashamed and maybe they couldn't. I don't know. I'm just wondering where all this fucking sex positivity really leaves women in their lives.
Well, I think that a lot of really amazing people have done a lot of really amazing work, like under the umbrella of sex positive culture. You know, Tristan Taramino, Carol Queen,
sure. Certain women who have security, and where did they get that security?
Right. Well, these, you know, I mean, I could go on to list like a lot more white women, white cis women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and these are people who are my friends and mentors.
Sure.
And I think have done a lot of really important things. And now, maybe that work had to be done that way, or it was done that way, but now I'm just like much more interested in the people who are speaking out about decolonizing sex positivity, for example, and like being cognizant of the ways that, yeah, ultimately if the mission of sex positivity is not like actually effectively, truthfully undermining oppression and hegemony, then the same people who have always had the power just continue to have the power, and then we're going to feel more ashamed because we thought that we did all of this
sex work.
Positive work, and yet here we are still feeling
yeah
like shit.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and also trans women of color being murdered in the street.
Yeah, and still. Now that we're all sex positive whores, now what? So that's a hard question.
Yeah.
Now what? And then how do you segue out of that lifestyle? And how do you get security? Show me a woman who is not interested in security.
Right. And
of some sort, whatever that means to her.
Yeah.
And trans women are being murdered in the street still.
You know, and like I.
And gay women are being attacked on the street still in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
As you know.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know,
I'm not saying we shouldn't be feminist whores, you know,
we should against all
patriarchy.
We should all be feminist whores.
We should all be feminist whores against patriarchy. But, you know, now what?
Yeah. Well, and so going back to this idea that we actually do need shame, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it's that same question that gets asked a lot by a lot of different people, which is, and you know, and actually like Ellen Stagg was talking about the fact that you know, when she was on the show, that the people who pay for memberships to her site are the people who like, to a certain degree, like, feel bad about themselves because of their deviant desires, and then they, like, have their hand, then they've, you know, they've got their credit card out, you know, and like one hand on their dick and the other like on their wallet. And
yeah,
and so
I like that image.
Yeah, yeah. So like, so the question, I guess, like, the question is, like, can we imagine a human civilization or culture or society that where shame has been dissipated, and like, what are the goods that will come from that? And is that, is such a thing even possible, or do we need to learn how to harness shame and make it our bitch?
I think we should harness shame and make it our bitch. And like, then, you know, what girls are doing is capitalizing on shame.
Yeah.
You know, they're capitalizing on other people's shame.
And their own.
Which is smart.
Their like own internalized shame too, I think.
I do too.
Because, and their own internalized shame. Because people are also responding to that. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, can you
imagine a world without shame?
Yeah. That definitely sounds like a TED Talk.
It does. It does sound like a TED Talk. Have you heard the one on that sex worker talking about what do sex workers want?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Juno Mack, right?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's really fucking good. Really good. Everybody should watch it. And it's short.
Just like, yeah, but nobody's asking what do sex workers want?
Yeah.
You know, it's that, fantastic.
Oh, so good.
She's great. I'm like, yeah.
I think she's got a book deal.
Does she? I'm sure.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So I cannot imagine a world without shame, because I think it's useful to us, and it creates a nice tension. I think that it's kind of like envy. It's sort of like that quivering box of shame makes art interesting. It makes sex interesting. It makes books interesting, characters interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to do totally without it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so then my further question is, because shame is bad, and feeling ashamed is horrible, and I honestly think a lot of really boring art just foregrounds shame and, like, doesn't actually, people are like, well, I'm ashamed, so I'm just gonna, like, create this thing that's really self-effacing, and, but not actually, like, do any work to ask myself where that shame comes from, or to try to, like, purge that shame. I guess I'm, like, I'm interested not in somebody being like, here's my shame, but somebody being like, here is my, like, twisted, disgusting attempt to purge my shame. And mm-hmm. I could, like, accept that it will take more than once, or could never happen, but I'm just going to keep detoxing or attempting to detox.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. I think there's a trend that I've noticed that has to do with celebrating our fucked upness.
Yeah.
And it's a bit nihilistic for me. I like glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
I like transcendence. I like humor.
But I feel like trying to purge shame is really hopeful and
maybe it is.
And cathartic.
I think learning from our mistakes is hopeful.
Yeah.
Not, you know, mucking around in the shit and putting it on display. And I see a lot of like, let's celebrate our fucked upness.
Yeah.
Let's hate ourselves.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny?
No.
Isn't it funny how much we hate ourselves?
It's really not fucking, you know, funny. And it's not interesting. It doesn't make interesting art.
Yeah. Let's learn from our mistakes. That's interesting. Let's transcend this and learn something and say something that's going to surprise everyone.
I guess I'm finding myself thinking about the gentleman hanging from flesh hooks at the warehouse party in San Francisco mm-hmm. in the 90s that you were describing. Like, mm-hmm. maybe what that person is doing is trying to purge his shame, and probably afterwards feels a lot of, going back to the other word, release.
Yeah, I think so. And it's culturally specific and a relevant conversation to have.
Yeah.
And we were using our bodies to make others read us and deal with us.
Yeah.
Sexually, as sex workers, as ACT UP members, as like members of a community, allies of the men we lost from AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a demand to listen and watch and look again.
Mm. Yeah, you're not tired of looking at, are you?
No.
What do you think is the difference between working with, like, thinking of, like, let's think of shame as a material, like as a mm-hmm. sexual material.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, the abstract version of a dildo, you know, mm-hmm. it's like a material that you can bring into your sex life and everybody is going to use that material differently. What is the difference between using shame in a way that is in the service of undermining the patriarchy, undermining white supremacy, you know, undermining cis supremacy, like, you know, really trying to like make that the project of sex positive culture as opposed to just wallowing?
Like, what? I have no fucking idea.
Mm.
Tina, that's a great question. I mean, how do we use it to sort of fray the edges of the power structure?
Well, what's the difference between using it and
wallowing in it?
And wallowing it. Yeah, exactly. Wallowing in it.
Well, again, I mean, what I said before is, I think, have some sort of resolution, have, you know, learn from mistakes made, create characters that are defiant and intelligent, sex workers who don't die.
Yeah.
Sex workers that thwart expectations and that live in, like, this intelligent space, you know, with real partners and lives.
Well, let me.
I think art is generally the answer.
Hell,
that's
yes.
probably going to be my answer for, like, all revolution.
Well, let me frame it this way. I'm thinking about the lusty lady and, like, having been on both sides of the plexiglass, mm-hmm. and also having read an advanced copy of your script mm-hmm. about the lusty lady. And actually also thinking about Jack the Stripper's work and, mm-hmm. and the way that she writes about patrons or clients, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so on one hand you have a strip club patron, and, you know, you could certainly apply this to any sex worker client, who comes into the lusty and is like, okay, what is the structure that has been put in place here by these women or by the management or whatever? I want to get whatever I want to get. I want to get whatever kick I want to get out mm-hmm. of being here. I want to be sexually satisfied because naked, sexy women are beautiful to me and get me off, turn me on and get me off. So I'm going to come in and, like, enjoy the show, tip well, take somebody in the private pleasures booth, tell them what my fetish is, have them act it out for me, give them smile, like, and, you know, like, get off and be on my way, as opposed to somebody who wants to push the boundaries of what they know is respectful or allowed, like bringing in a camera and unconsensually filming the women there and putting it on the internet, right? Like coming in and bringing a gun, like coming in and being abusive, not like playing with power, but like saying horrible, degrading things that people didn't agree to listen to. Like, isn't the difference between that, a, you know, with the first guy, he has a healthy outlet for, like, the release from shame by, like, indulging in this, like, deviant behavior of going to a peep show, versus the guy who is actually, like, the second guy is the one who is, like, wallowing in shame and, like, not actually finding an effective outlet for it.
I guess I don't really get the question, except to say that, like, isn't all of that humanity? Isn't that all of those things valid and human and terrifying? And don't we all have those beastly instincts? I don't think that great intentions buy hookers and smoke meth with them. I mean, I don't think, like, super thoughtful, you know, cultural critics want a hand job from a stranger in a car. Like, I think everyone does. I think that we're a culture suffering from terminal loneliness, and we want connection. and release. And I think that that comes in all shapes and sizes. I mean, dude, the total freaks were at the Lusty.
Yeah.
I've, you know, been a dom. I've been a prostitute briefly. I'm mostly a stripper for a million years and I've seen it all.
Yeah.
But the freaks were at the Lusty.
Yeah.
They wanted to be seen. They were like shoving zucchinis up their asses and tying themselves into pretzels.
Yeah.
They were like wearing Santa hats and like coming in as a gang of clowns and all jerking off together. Like they were like Enema Man, like doing the elaborate enema shows. The freaks were at the Lusty Lady for some reason. It, like something about the glass and the distance gave them permission to really explore a lot of like deep-seated shit. Now, does it come from shame? I don't know. Like as children, were they like beaten to a bloody pulp and chained to a radiator by their fathers, left to like wander the streets at age 13? I don't fucking know. Or did they come from like perfectly normal homes?
Yeah.
And they're perfectly normal adults.
And like,
I don't know.
And like correlation is not causation, right? Because like plenty of people who were abused are gay or kinky or end up doing sex work. And plenty of people who weren't abused do all those things, and plenty of people who were abused never do those things.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, the billboard with like Melissa Phoebos and I, she went to Sarah Lawrence, I went to Mills.
Yeah.
Like the Mills girl and the Sarah Lawrence girls who like did a little heroin and a little meth and became thoughtful, hugely feminist sex workers and wrote memoirs.
Yeah.
Our pictures on the billboard look a lot different than the girls I saw in jail being picked up for prostitution over and over and over. Those are really different lifestyles.
Yeah. Well, what's the difference?
Class.
Yeah.
Privilege.
Yeah.
The girls at the Lusty, we were all pretty middle class.
Yeah.
I mean, we were not streetwalkers herding and, you know, feeding massive heroin habits.
Right. And we, so the question, I mean.
And race.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, the political question is how do we leverage our privilege so that the humanity of folks who do sex work in more marginalized conditions are where their humanity is recognized, where they have services so that they can do what they want to do with their lives, which may be to continue to work or maybe whatever the fuck they want. Like how, like what are the
programs? Yeah. I mean, I've been asking this for 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I make everybody crazy. Like I go on podcasts and TV shows and I look people in the eye and say, so hire me. You want to rehabilitate a stripper? I've been hire me. And they laugh just like you did. It's uncomfortable. Like, rehabilitate me. Rehabilitate my friends. Like, I don't want a sugar daddy. I want a job. Right. I want a gig.
Right.
Like,
right,
help us. Right. You want to help us? Help us.
Yeah.
Give us jobs.
Yeah.
Like, let me into the writing room.
Yeah.
Let my friends into the writing room.
Yeah.
Hire us for jobs. I have beautiful strippers who would love to be stylists and who are more than capable of doing whatever job they want to do.
So why?
And girls who are trans girls, give them more job opportunities. Help them segue into the marketplace so that they're not risking their lives. Or if they want to keep working, give them resources.
Yeah.
Give them counseling. You know, make it more accessible to them. Give them their community.
Yeah.
Give them an AA meeting that's just for sex workers who are trans.
Yeah.
Give them a safe room. Give them a room.
Yeah.
See if they show up.
Yeah.
If they don't, that's fine.
Yeah,
but just keep giving them the room. Keep giving them the room every Monday night between 7 and 10. That's their room. They want to go. They just want to cry. They want to talk about sex work alone with each other and get resources and like have coffee and donuts. Great.
Yeah.
Just give them a space to talk and be with each other. Help each other. They want to help each other. They that like is, helping each other.
That is really fucking true.
So those are some, I mean, maybe I'm naive. Maybe those things are easier said than done. I don't know.
They're hard, but that doesn't mean they're not worth doing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to do it. Like I would love to do it. I think building alliances is powerful.
Yeah.
I think it's hard in LA because it is we're so far away from each other.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, the answer is find the people who are already doing the work and ask them what they need to keep doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I mean, that's
like ask sex workers what they want.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what I want. I want a writing gig.
And also the people who are doing grassroots organizing. Maybe they're doing grassroots organizing for queer communities, and you can go to them and say, like, what can I do so that we can reach out to sex work communities within the communities that you already serve, using the methods that you know to be effective, or that, yeah. Or, you know, effective is important, but just as important is, you know, the methods that makes the community feel respected and is respectful to the community.
Yeah. But then there's the problem of like, oh, here comes another white lady.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's the problem. I mean,
here, like, come the white ladies.
Well, so how do you, you know, I mean, and then the, you know, the other principle is step up, step back. Right. So yeah. like when, cause I also don't want to create a cage out of my own white guilt, you know, or cis guilt.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Why do you want to really amplify sex worker voices? It seems like that is your project, and that's what this podcast is about.
Yeah. I mean,
why is it so important to you, do you think, or culturally?
For the reasons that I said before, that I feel like sex workers are the marginalized of the marginalized, mm-hmm. within sex cultures, and also the dynamics of sex work are endlessly interesting to me, and they do have to do with what we're talking about right now, with shame and money and patriarchal forces, and how do we navigate and negotiate what to take from the patriarchy, mm-hmm. or like, in what ways are we replicating and perpetuating and like coddling the patriarchy, but also in what ways do we have to be realistic about the fact that we need to make a living, and if this is a skill or an opportunity that's available to us.
Yeah.
And the most interesting people I've ever met in my life are the sex workers that I have known, and even the ones that I don't know. And
they're witchy. They're witchy, witchy and enchanting. They're witchy as fuck.
Yeah.
They're smart as shit.
Yeah.
And I think that my problem with, like, what you were saying earlier about Lena Dunham being against the exploitation of women in general, which is not a bad instinct. It's a very feminist instinct.
Well, that's right. That,
it's the anti-sex work, Audre Lorde school of anti, like, we shouldn't even have sex work, is totally unrealistic.
And Gloria Steinem, very much in that white feminist way, is, yeah, very, like, are the utopia is a world in which women wouldn't have to do sex work. And that's just, by the way,
I disagree.
I
think women have been doing it since cave days.
I mean, I agree.
We've been using our sexual power. It's about sexual power. Like, it, so you don't think we should have sexual power? Because I reject the idea that it's the person with money has the power. I disagree. Mm. It's the sex worker that has the power.
Hell yes.
They have the product that is wanted.
Yeah.
They have the thing which is hotly desired.
Yes.
We have the sexual power, and we can deny it. And as a person who has been, like, mostly a stripper, I am not giving away. I'm not selling sex at all. I'm selling conversation and entertainment. And I don't even take my clothes off.
Yeah. And a lot of people are selling lots of different kinds of sex. And
I think
they're
selling an experience.
Yeah.
So what about that is exploitative exactly?
Yeah. And the idea that you're selling your bodies, or that other people are selling girls.
We're not,
like,
selling,
you're not
our
selling
bodies.
And also you're not, like,
ask a trans woman prostitute if they're selling their bodies.
It's
an experience. You're selling an experience.
Exactly.
That's TV is the same way.
Yeah.
Ask an attorney what they sell. It's not that different.
Yeah.
Agreed. Any business. Yeah. You're selling an experience. You're selling an idea.
Yeah.
It's all the same shit.
Yeah. Agreed. Absolutely. And,
but I agree with you that like, it's a voice that needs to be more amplified. And I wrote a piece in the New York Times a couple of years ago. I don't know if you caught it. Stop stealing from strippers.
I did read that.
About wage theft and about that experience of like how the industry does need reform.
Yes.
You know, it does need reform. And I don't believe that reform means a bunch of lawsuits.
Mm.
It means, you know, let's not steal from strippers and give them the respect of being employees.
You know? Absolutely. Agreed 100%.
Yeah.
What is your feeling about decriminalization?
Oh, I think it should absolutely be decriminalized.
What do you think will change when, let's just say when sex work is decriminalized?
Women will not be picked up off the street and thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Johns will have less shame.
Yeah.
About what they want and need and are seeking out, which I think is a positive thing.
Yeah.
The safety is huge. Just the fact that when Backpage was taken offline here,
yeah,
it really hurt my sex worker friends.
Yeah,
directly in their
and the
wallets.
Most marginalized ones,
the trans women.
Yeah.
And the women of color. It hurt their business significantly. Totally. They haven't recovered. It's months ago and they haven't recovered.
Yeah.
But I say all the time in my writing that sex workers have always been the most resourceful and forward-thinking workforce, and they have every workaround. They're 10 steps ahead of every other business.
Yeah.
So they have found ways around it.
Yeah.
But it has hit them in the wallet.
Yeah.
Which is horrible.
Yeah.
And difficult. And, you know, it's dangerous. You know, I worry about my sex worker friends and lovers being picked up, being arrested, because it's horrible to like be afraid and be in financial fear.
Yeah.
But it's more horrible to be hiding, be in financial fear, and get arrested.
Absolutely. And then you're, in some ways,
it's very
trapped
alienating.
in that system potentially forever.
Yeah. It's an alienating downward spiral of shame.
Bringing it all back home. Antonia, I feel this may be the beginning of many conversations.
I hope so. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Where can people find you on the internet?
I don't hide behind any monikers.
Cool.
I'm just my first and last name.
Okay.
Antonia Crane is my Twitter. Antonia Crane is my Instagram.
Cool.
Find me, follow me.
Cool.
AntoniaCrane.com is my website.
And what?
Because I'm not ashamed.
Awesome.
So it's my name. I don't have any fancy names.
So what is coming up that you want people to pay attention to with your work?
Well, I have a collection of essays on sex work and feminism that I'm looking to get out into the world.
Awesome.
I have a Lenny letter that's going to be coming out soon about coming out to my mother as a sex worker before she died. I have a screenplay, The Lusty. We're hoping to make that movie. And I think that's about it. My memoir, Spent, is out on paperback. So that's kind of important.
Absolutely.
So you can get that one on Amazon for cheap. I also did my own audio.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. So audiobooks are always great.
Definitely. And I'm sure after listening to your voice for the last hour, people are going to want to listen to you read your book.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and I hope you'll come back on the show again one day.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Antonia.
Bye, Tina.
And thanks for the coffee. Thanks for listening to episode 49. Follow at Tina Horn's Ass on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe on Acast, iTunes, etc. Take a few seconds to write a review. And please, tell your friends about the show. Visit whyarepeopleintothat.com to subscribe to our newsletter and listen to our entire archive. As ever, Why Are People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme song is by Vivid Windows from Oakland, California, and this project is supported in part by my generous and shameless patrons. Fill that void by pledging patreon.com/TINA
HORN. Until next time, I'll be rehabilitating strippers by hiring them.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.